Lee and Flying T Ranch versus Wynn.
Good afternoon. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Nelson Berry. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes, if I may. I represent the appellants. Thank you. As I said in the conclusion to my reply brief, the court below abused its discretion by refusing to grant Blakey's motion to vacate the judgment because under the law and the facts of this case, the court had no discretion. Under the facts and law of this case, it was required to set aside the verdict. It is undisputed that the Wrens, without any excuse, much less a reasonable excuse, wrongfully withheld critical evidence which had been requested in discovery before the first trial and lied about the completeness of their discovery production. In fact, the court below found that the Wrens violated their discovery obligations by refusing to produce the requested evidence, but refused to sanction the Wrens for their admitted discovery violation. Yet, Carlson versus Lake Chelan Community Hospital reminds us that Civil Rule 26G mandates the imposition of sanctions if there is a discovery violation. And
is it your position that every time the court finds a discovery violation, it has to impose a sanction?
Yes. Civil Rule 26G mandates it. If I may take a moment to quote. If certification is made in violation of the rule, the court, upon motion or upon its own initiative, shall impose upon the person who made the certification an appropriate sanction. And well, in this case, this was set forth in Robinson versus Perez, where the court said that since the Wrens had not fully complied with Blakey's, and I quote now, quote, discovery request did not come to light until after judgment, no sanction other than a new trial is available. That's also from the Taylor versus Cessna Aircraft case. And by the way, that principle, that if the discovery violation does not come to light until after the judgment is rendered, the only sanction available is a new trial, was recognized by this court in its unpublished decision of DeWitt versus Bryant at 148 Wash App 1013. I would also say.
And you think that's true regardless of what probity the evidence that was discovered later has?
Well, in both Robinson and Taylor, here's what the court said. A new trial based upon a prevailing party's misconduct does not require a showing that the new evidence would have materially affected the outcome of the first trial. In Taylor, and this quote was reaffirmed and repeated in Robinson, it says, quoted from a case interpreting the identical federal rule, quote, it cannot be stated with certainty that all of this would have changed the result of the case, but a litigant who is engaged in misconduct is not entitled to the benefit of calculation, which can be little better than speculation as to the extent of the wrong inflicted upon his opponent. And
what
in this
if
case,
it's more than speculation that the evidence doesn't demonstrate it could have reversed the theory? I mean,
yes.
For instance, in this case, that the photographs
yes.
do nothing to undercut the adverse possession claim.
Well, let me show how they do, okay? Because although under this law, she was not required to show that the withholding of this evidence materially prejudiced her ability to prepare for the first trial and would have affected the outcome, clearly it did. For example, in his closing remarks to the jury, Mr. Foster stated that Terry Curtis... in his closing remarks to the judge, thank you, I appreciate that. The Wrens attorney stated that Terry Curtis's Exhibit 28, quote, was the only empirical evidence showing the location of the fence, the property line, and the historic property line.
What do you do with the fact that the trial court said it didn't make any difference where the fence was because there was no evidence of possible use?
Well, that's clearly wrong. We have the historic fence line that and this is...
You can see it. It's covered by brambles 70 feet wide.
Well, because if you look at the photographs that were wrongfully withheld, it's clear that you can see it.
Okay, and
Well, it both, well, first of all.
Less than 10 years
no,
before.
No, no, because this fence was constructed in the 1930s, Your Honor.
And the fence was.
Yeah.
The photographs were taken in what year?
Well, so, the one that I think
less
is very.
Less than 10 years before trial, weren't they?
The critical photograph, Your Honor, I think, is found at Appendix 23.
In what year was it taken?
2009.
And what you show adverse use 10 years before
okay.
the complaint was
well,
filed.
What it shows is that the fence was never moved before, it was not moved
that's
in 2000.
The issue is what use was made with reference to the fence line. That's what the trial court found was determinative with respect to the adverse possession claim. In its findings, what? Page 3 in the trial, excuse me, it's written decision, not its finding. It says that the only evidence presented in the subject of possession
well, let me just suggest that.
How would these photographs change that view of the trial court of the evidence of use presented?
Well, let me just suggest that going in and preparing a fence is a use of this property. That's something that's done by an owner. You go in and you're repairing your own fence. I'm sorry.
How would these photographs produce any evidence that would give the court a different view of the use that was made with
Because it shows that it shows that the fence was never moved, which was the crux of their case, that they had moved the fence into the Wren's property.
Now, the crux of their case is that the blackberry brambles were so wide that nobody used up to the fence.
And the photographs show that the blackberry bushes were not so wide. In fact, it shows that.
You show that in 2009, that there's no
yes.
evidence of what it looked like before. Why don't you address this on your rebuttal?
All right.
Thank you.
Good morning. If it pleases the court, I'm Bill Foster. I represent the Wrens in this case. And as is evidently, or is evident from the record, I have represented the Wrens all the way along in this case. I think the Your Honors have hit the nail on the head here. And as I said before, what I think was a different panel in the first go-around in the Court of Appeals, forget about the fence. Fence is really nothing. What this case is about, this is an adverse possession case which deals with the old, well-established law that in order to claim title of property by adverse possession, you must at first possess it. In this trial, as was noted in the first decision and is noted in Judge Apple's written decision and his findings and conclusion, Ms. Blakey provided a dearth of evidence about actual possession. Possession of this property was dictated by the existence of this hedgerow, which just a few minutes ago this court noted that it was 70 feet wide, and that constrained the possession on both sides of this fence. And now she comes back and she argues that six photographs that were inadvertently not provided in the original discovery request would somehow turn the tide of this proceeding. It would have done none of that. If you simply look at the photographs themselves, even if you are able to discern the location of a fence in the midst of blackberries that had been raised by Ms. Blakey, you're hard-pressed to see that there's any probative value to those photographs whatsoever. More importantly than that, this motion that Ms. Blakey brings before this court today is an abuse of discretion motion. In other words, the standard of review for failing to grant a Rule 60 motion is, did the court abuse its discretion? And I submit that
the counsel suggests that there's a violation of the discovery request, U.S. 26, requires the sanction, and that says in the case for the proposition that post-trial the only sanction available is new.
Well, quite frankly, I think that case is limited to its facts, as is the Perez case. In those cases, the discovery violation was, first of all, directly contrary to a court order where the where the complaining party was required to disclose very specific information. That's especially true in the Perez case. In the Perez...
Do you think the rule in CR 26 depends upon whether there was an order of discovery?
Well, I think it's helpful to the court, but I also don't believe that... No, I don't believe it's required, nor do I believe that the mere existence of a discovery violation, assuming for the sake of argument that one occurred, which we don't concede, I think the question really comes to the probative value of the evidence itself.
When you say you don't concede a discovery violation, you mean because it was inadvertent?
It was inadvertent.
So you don't quarrel that these are photographs that should have been produced in response to
I do not quarrel with that issue, but I do quarrel with the issue that these photographs would have changed anything in this particular case. In turning back to the abuse of discretion standard here, we must remember that the judge that denied not just one but three CR 60 motions in this case is the same judge who heard the evidence at the trial, who considered the photographs that were admitted at the trial, and when he ruled on the last discovery violation, or excuse me, the last CR 60 motion, he didn't find that the evidence was at all probative. As a matter of fact, if you look at the findings of fact that were entered by the trial court after the last CR 60 motion, which findings of fact are not challenged on this appeal, I think it's evidently clear that Judge Apple did not consider those to be to warrant the granting of a CR 60 motion. The
counsel said they don't have the burden to show it would change the result, but since it was withheld, the rules are violated. Did you have the burden to demonstrate that the result would, in fact, not have changed?
Well, in fact, I think we did demonstrate that, because that was demonstrated. That was argued before Judge Apple at the last CR 60 motion, and it was a decision that he made, and he viewed the evidence. And not only did he view the evidence on that occasion, he viewed similar and additional evidence through two earlier CR 60 motions and the trial itself. I don't believe that Justice Leach asked a question citing Rule 60, which said appropriate sanctions. And I don't think that ties the trial court's hands to say, okay, we've got to start all over again. I think when you use the word appropriate sanctions, that means let's look at what was not produced, and let's decide whether or not it would have been material. This case is wholly different than Taylor, and it's wholly different than Perez. It's more like Hickey, because in Hickey, the court stated that the withheld evidence must be material, and that, by its very nature, tells us that not every single nitpicky little violation would support or require the imposition of sanctions. And I don't.
Is it your position that as long as you demonstrate these photographs aren't material to the issue of adverse use, you've carried the day?
Yes. Yes, because that's the issue at trial. I mean, anybody could come in after trial and 2 years after trial and say, wait a minute, look what we found. And if it was something they found that probably should have been disclosed in discovery, does that automatically support the sanction that they now request, the granting of a new trial? No. I think at that point in time, the court could look at it and say, well, I think these should have been produced, but they weren't produced, but I don't find that there's any probative value in this evidence. So, and I think that's closer to what Hickey stands for than either Perez or Taylor. And again, the photographs in this particular case were of no help to the court, because they didn't tell us anything about possession. Ms. Blakey was the owner of the property on the other side of this hedgerow. She could have testified but she didn't, about the use. And that is the critical element in any adverse possession case. Has someone used the property, possessed the property?
He was the owner from 1991.
Your Honor, it's been so long, I'm not, I thought it was later than that, but.
I know that she acquired the property by a sheriff's deed in 91 and leased the property to Rawlins until 98.
That's in accord with my recollection as well.
And Rawlins apparently had property on both sides of the fence until 98?
Rawlins owned the Blakey property before, or excuse me, the Wren property before before it was purchased from Rawlins. That's correct. So I just don't think that the law states, or the court rule says, that every single nitpicky little violation supports the sanction that is being requested here.
And the existence of the fence was not enough to establish adverse intent, adverse possession.
Well, if you've looked at the photographs and if you can see the fence, I applaud you because I've looked
at it. Their theory is that the fence was enough, and once those pictures demonstrate that when the blackberries are removed, we know where it is. It's been there long enough.
Right, but a fence does, especially this particular fence, this particular fence that was embedded in a 70-foot hedgerow was not visible to the Wrens at the time they purchased the property because it was buried so deep. It doesn't really, and it was in a dilapidated condition. When you finally unburied it to see it, that fence doesn't tell us anything. Plus the fact you could always go back to the cases that have come out of Eastern Washington primarily, which indicate that a fence that's used to contain cattle, for example, is not indicative of adverse possession. It's just a fence. Now, if this was an urban environment where the fence was a 6-foot cedar fence, maybe it would, but it didn't here. We believe the trial court decision should be affirmed, as well as the pre-filing restriction.
Thank you, counsel.
Let me begin by addressing your issue.
Which one do you think is my issue?
About possession. The court held in the Supreme Court case of Wood versus Nelson at 57, Wash Second, 539 and 541, where a fence purports to be a line fence rather than a random one, and when it is effective in excluding an abutting owner from the unused part of a tract, otherwise generally in use, it constitutes prima facie evidence of hostile possession up to the fence. Let me interrupt.
Because you've already got a problem. The fence didn't restrict anybody's use of property because it couldn't get anywhere near the fence because there were 70 feet of bramble. Couldn't get through the bramble.
What the court is perhaps overlooking, which I think the trial judge did as well, is that this historic fence was put there in the 1930s, okay?
You presented no evidence of when the brambles first grew or how long they were there, according to the trial judge, in unchallenged findings of fact that are not impeached by these photographs.
Let me tell you let me just tell you the judge is wrong about this issue about occlusion, because obviously the historic fence was not obscured when it was installed by the Crozies, the Wren's predecessors in interest, in 1930. Edwin Tanis, who was Blakey's predecessor,
the Crozies didn't acquire the property until 1964.
The point is that the adverse possession had long been established. It was established within 10 years after 1930s.
You should get them right.
Okay, the point.
The Crozies acquired the property by real estate contract on March 31, 1964. It had nothing to do with the construction of a fence in the 30s. What evidence do you have that the brambles weren't there within a year or two of the construction of the fence in the 30s?
Because we have witnesses who saw the fence. Edward Tannis, who was Blakey's predecessor in interest, he saw the historic fence. That appears at RP 237 through 239. Blakey, of course, saw the fence when she repaired it in 1990. That's evidence of use. That's evidence of hostile use. Tannis leased the property from Blakey to the Rawlins. The Rawlins saw the fence. That's at RP 354 through 358. After Blakey acquired her polished parcel and made the 1990 repairs, she leased the property to the Rollins. Mr. Rollins testified he saw the historic fence after leasing it. The point is that the adverse possession had occurred long before the Wrens purchased this property in 2014. This historic fence was built in the 1930s, okay? The fence had been there forever. And if you would look at the photographs, which were wrongfully withheld, you'll see that the entire fence is not obscured. For example, all of the witnesses testified that the fence was straight. It wasn't.
That tells us somebody might have used the property up to the fence in 2009.
Yeah.
What it doesn't tell us is anything about the use up to the fence before then.
Of course it does. As the court in Wood says, if you have a fence, that's sufficient. Moreover, Ms. Blakey, the evidence is undisputed that she repaired the fence in 1990. That's use. That's use. She's using the fence. She's repairing it. What more use do you want?
What use does she have between 1990 and 2009?
What use does she have? The use of the fence is to block out the adjoining landowner.
But it
doesn't matter, Your Honor. Adverse possession has already been established. It was established 10 years after the fence was installed in 1930s.
And what evidence establishes that? Who's testifying?
Because the evidence is undisputed that everybody who owned this property from the 1930s on recognized the historic fence line as being the boundary between the two properties. Everyone testified to that. There was no dispute. That was uncontroverted. Everyone recognized that. Everyone accepted. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That was an error on the trial court's part. You didn't challenge findings about use in the
Of course we did. In the previous appeal. The point is, Your Honor, we didn't have the evidence in the previous appeal. This is the first time that the Blakeys had proof that the Wrens had wrongfully withheld evidence. This was the first time the court had made a finding that they violated their discovery obligations, and this was the first time that they actually presented the evidence that was wrongfully withheld that established that the fence was not moved. Remember, the gist of their whole argument.
Thank you, counsel.
Okay, thank you.
Next matter this morning.